Welcome to Cast Cerberus. I'm Christian Corley. With me this week is James McLean. And I'm very pleased to say we have a semi-regular guest back with us. It's Gareth Cavanagh. How are you doing, Gareth?
Woo! Brilliant to be back. Welcome back to the K, he says himself.
There's a lawnmower in the background which is giving me Hans Zimmer
God,
vibes.
That's very annoying, isn't it?
Let it be Hans Zimmer. It's got that sort of Joker under drone vibe in the background, as if something bad's about to happen.
All the days for someone to start mowing the lawn, it has to be today, doesn't it? I've moved into another room.
That's a lawnmower.
Okay. I think it's a wood chipper where I put the enemies of Cutaway Comics into it.
have you just
mincemeat?
You told Hans Zimmer to vacate your garden. Just said, well,
I've gone into the tertiary control room, also known as the bathroom.
Okay, well that's convenient. Thank you. So you mentioned,
is that canon? Is the tertiary console room also a bathroom in canon? Is that,
I believe so. You know,
there's
a hot tub in there somewhere. You know, we've never had the TARDIS bathroom. Well, we've had a swimming pool, and I guess they use the seashells like Demolition Man for everything else.
Still, never worked that out.
Well, it's like 73 feet, isn't it? You know, we're not supposed to. Whatever answer you come up with is correct.
Yeah. So you mentioned Cutaway Comics. Which, you've been doing that for a while now. A few people may not be completely aware of what that is. So a quick overview, please, Gareth.
Yeah, so Cutaway Comics, it's actually 4 years ago that we did our first crowdfunder for Lytton. So Cutaway Comics
I know,
it's scary, isn't it? So Cutaway Comics, we do, at the moment, we do Doctor Who spin-offs. So we take creator-owned characters like Lytton or Omega or situations like Paradise Towers, and we do original comics on them, working with the creators and doing comics that can stand on their own right, but also fit into the world of Doctor Who if you would like them to. So that's what we do. And we fund all of our work through various crowdfunders on Kickstarter and now Indiegogo. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've been able to work with some amazing writers and artists, Adrian Salmon and Martin Geraghty, legends like John Ridgway, and new talents that we've found as well. So it keeps us busy. It started off as a kind of lockdown misery project, and here we are 4 years later.
Well, I think there's probably something I want to ask there. Why did you stop using Kickstarter, and why have you switched to Indiegogo?
Oh, right, yeah, that's a very astute question. So what's happened is Kickstarter have changed their rules, but they didn't tell anyone. So we submitted... No, this is true. So we had, we've done all our projects on Kickstarter so far, and we had Go Figure, which is our current project, which has got 5 days left, which I guess we'll talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
And we had it all ready to go. Everything was ready to go. We pressed the button to submit for review, which is always a formality up until then, and they said no. No, our new rules say that you can only do one Kickstarter at a time.
Right.
So you have to do it, finish it, and then do another one, which I guess is fine if you're just doing one little book or an enormous tech project that'll take you 5 years. But it doesn't really help people like us in the middle. So we went back and forth. And they just wouldn't relent. And in fact, I only found out that this was the reason for it by going through God knows how many obscure, frequently asked questions. And they'd only changed the rule that week. So if I'd submitted it a week before, we'd have gone. Anyway, we'd already done some stuff on Indiegogo, because Indiegogo have this brilliant scheme called In Demand. So after a Kickstarter or anything finishes, you can then keep it open on Indiegogo.
Right.
So if you've got packages left or, you know, some people can't afford it for that 3 weeks that you're out. And we'd done that with the big Philip Hinchcliffe book. And I thought it was good. So we thought, okay, we'll go to Indiegogo. And it's worked out very well. We've raised, I think, more or less exactly what we would have raised on Kickstarter. but without any of the arse. So yeah, so far quite happy with Indiegogo, and I suspect we'll be staying with Indiegogo.
Okay, so you've previously used Indiegogo for the Philip Hinchcliffe book last year.
Yes.
So the new book, Go Figure, is related to character options figures, is that right?
That's right. So I don't know if you guys remembered the brilliant Steve Sansweet books on Star Wars figures.
Oh, yeah.
That have been coming out for years. Wonderful. So Steve Sansweet did this, you know, he had everything. And he was working with the Lucasfilm archives, and he had every single piece of merchandise ever been done. And he started putting them in these guides and photographing them. And I remember last year saying to the team, you know, we haven't got one of these for the Doctor Who figures, have we? And they're pretty good. They're pretty special. Lots of people seem to collect them. So that was in the back of my mind. And I thought, well, why don't we do a book just about the figures? And that's what this book is. So it's every single figure and the packaging all in one enormous, beautiful landscape A4 book with shots of the figures, clean shots of the figures. So I don't think hardly anyone, I don't think anyone owns all of them in its entirety, but it lets you see everything in one place, everything that's ever been produced by character options for their figure range, all in one book. So it's the cheapest way to basically own it all without owning it all.
You know, I'm going to have to tell you, you need to stop the presses, because you need to make a change to your book. Because I have a suggestion. Because something I found really interesting, which I doubt is in the book, and I'm obviously being a little... No, you need to stop. You need to stop it and put this in. But there's a lovely little subgenre of people who take the character options, things like the police boxes, and then they use them as the base template to re-sculpt them, to actually make them more accurate or to make them specific. So there's almost like, you know, the character options are kind of like recreations of the shows, and then you get the recreations of the recreations, which becomes... We should probably make a great spin-off book rather than...
We need an audio signature for when James raises the authenticity of police boxes, I think.
There is a noise fine. We had to draw lines somewhere because, you know, we had all sorts of debate. You know, we had customs. I know people do lots of customs.
Yeah.
Dioramas. We had to sort of... So we, in the end, we had to kind of... We have found a way to have our cake and eat it, which is where we are. But at the moment, we've said, right, it's just the figures that character options have done. Now, whether they're right or wrong, whether it's, you know... And in fact, Destroyed Cassandra, which I'm told is considered the very worst and cheeky figure, the Cassandra frame is actually more accurate on that one, so I'm told, than on the original Cassandra. So we're finding all these things. So we do have a section in there which is for prototypes, and
that's cool.
We're showing a selection of prototypes. We haven't got all of them by any, you know, long chalk, but we've picked some interesting ones. And actually, we also did a, when we launched this, I think 2 weeks ago, we did a request for, you know, we put an open call out saying, has anyone got interesting prototypes that we haven't seen? And we've had some amazing ones through, things that we didn't think, we heard existed, but we've now got proof that they're there. So there is prototypes in there, and some of them are the rainbow figures that we call, where they've just, you know, tested a sculpt using whatever colour plastic they had. But some are incredibly detailed and painted, and a shame they never made it to market for whatever reason. So you get that as well.
Are they all prototypes of ones that did make it to market? Are there all prototypes of ones which didn't?
We've got a mix. Got a mix in there. So some are prototypes where there's detail differences, and some are in the finish, and some are, you know, some are just different. And then there's the mythical ones that just never made it to market. I guess because maybe the moment moved on or the set wasn't viable. You know, every single one seems to have a story as to why it didn't make it. But they are in the book.
Do you have a personal passion for, I mean, because it's like a toy stalgia, isn't it? This I suppose the character options it isn't, because it's still kind of a collector thing going on. But so what is it, do you think, which sort of draws us to these? What is it? Why do we love these toys?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, this was a slightly newer thing for me, because I haven't collected them. I've got about 10 that have been given to me, and they're beautiful. You know, I've got the K1 robot, which I think is astonishingly lovely. And beautiful and so detailed and so well scaled. We really don't deserve things of this quality. So it wasn't something I was as aware with, but there's two things here really. I worked on a fairly horrible Doctor Who convention in Manchester about 5-6 years ago. And when we were doing the programming, they had Aldoar and the character options guys. And I remember thinking, oh, well, no one will be at that. And it filled the hall. And I remember thinking, bloody hell, this is actually a thing, isn't it? This is bigger than the doctors we've got on. This is bigger than the companions. It is actually a thing. People have come into this room just to hear the man behind the range and maybe see some prototypes. So I thought, I kind of stuck a flag in it. And then when I came up with the idea and I chatted with Gary and with Richard Lloyd and with Chris Hill, you know, about what we could do, I then realised that actually there's a generational story here, that there is a mix of older fans who basically like the artefacts or are collecting or wish that, oh God, I wish we'd had, you know, Sutek and Lawrence Scarman to play with as kids. And then on the other side, anything that wasn't, you know, fine art castings figures or bloody, you know, mega dolls that didn't look like Leela. So, and then on the other side, I noticed there was a whole story about millennial and Gen Z fans. So basically people who were children when the show came back with Eccleston and Tennant and Smith, and grew up with these toys, and they were a beloved and thrilling part of their childhoods, and this was basically their story. So I thought, actually there's a thing here, and it's a story, it's a passion that younger fans can share with older fans in a slightly different way, but it's love and passion and thrilling, and no one else had done it, which I thought was peculiar. So
yeah.
Well, it's been done, you know, it has been done in, like, Doctor Who magazines did a couple of specials, which, to be fair, you know, did their best in the confines of a magazine. But no one's done the Sansweet thing where you've got, you know, 90-degree rotations of key figures and all the, you know, accessories and all the lovely things and guaranteed photos of every single one that was produced, which has been a hell of an undertaking by these guys. Just when the other month, just when they thought they'd done it, they realised they were missing one Dalek. So there's kind of a scramble for a Dalek. This afternoon I'm meeting, you know, God, it's like Cold War. I'm meeting someone this afternoon to get photographs of a rare 12-inch remote controlled Dalek, which we didn't know about until about a month ago. So we're kind of filling in the gaps, but I think what we're going to present is going to be definitive, because the guys that we're working on with it are absolute experts, genuine experts.
So who's working on the book?
So Gary Russell's editing, mm-hmm. Will Brooks is designing, Richard Lloyd, who is on YouTube as Stetson Doctor, so he's younger, and this is his thing. He's doing the writing and he's doing most of the photographing. And Chris Hill, who has the Space Museum site, he's based in America, and he's got pretty much everything in the original packaging. So between these guys, and then we've got Connor Allen and a few other people chipping in, we've built the picture up. But do you know what's interesting? None of these super collectors, when we actually looked at it, have got everything. So I don't think there's anyone out there, I could be wrong, but we haven't found them. There's no one out there with definitively everything yet. But once this book comes out, people will know what they're missing.
Yeah.
And I would imagine this will help super collectors fill their collection. And the rest of us can just open the book and gaze at it.
Hello, Christian here. I'm just interrupting this podcast to let you know that we have relaunched our Patreon. There are three options that you can choose from to support Casterbus. We have a £1 option, a £4 option, and an £8.50 option. These are all monthly, and the £4 and £8.50 option both come with a 7-day free trial, which I think is quite a great option to take. You can find out more at patreon.com/Casterbus. We'd really appreciate it if you could support this and help us in our ambition of creating more material for you, podcasts, reading materials, and possibly more. But if you can't support us on Patreon, it's fine. But it would be great if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Now, back to the podcast. I'm looking at the stretch goals as well. So you've got a bit of extra stuff going on there with a fold-out posters and Radio Times-inspired postcards and a supplement including the Time Squad micro-universe in 10 and 12-inch figures. I know what Time Squad is because I have some of those. But okay. What's micro-universe? What's that?
Oh, you're probably talking to the wrong people here, because my understanding of Micro Universe is this was a very fun little range that came out, and it's beloved of a lot of those younger fans, and they were different. So they had like a big Dalek saucer that you could put lots of little Daleks in. It was a bit more Lego-y. And again, that was something that we were asked for, because why we're crowdfunding this is for two reasons. Is one, so we can fund production of the book, and we're about there. But the other side is we wanted to be able to offer extras to people who back us early. So on the higher tiers, you get all these supplemental books that we've added. And we've already added some supplements, a big one on Sonic Screwdriver, which we want to expand, one on Remote Control Daleks, which, you know, and then there's all these other. So if we raise another £8,000 in the next 5 days, which is doable on crowdfunding because you always get a big uptick in the last couple of days,
yeah,
then you'll pretty much get everything. So, and even things that aren't technically character options, but we think sit in the same area. So that's where the Torchwood figures on the poster fits in. There was a lot of debate about that. Gary was very, no, they're not character options. And other people went, well, yeah, I know they're not character options, but I didn't know that when I was eight. And I was playing with them. They were all part of the same universe. So the supplements allows us to keep the book pure, but also to have, for everyone else to have all this information in one lovely big cardboard folder on their shelf. So it's a sort of cake and eat it moment for us.
I've discovered what Micro Universe is. It's related to a board game. I do actually recall seeing these back in the day.
God, I'm glad I've got you here. So it's been fascinating for me because, like I say, it's not an area that I knew much about other than the fact that lots of people love them. It has a dedicated following and nobody had put it all together in one place.
Yeah, which is kind of incredible that it hasn't really been, as you know, it hasn't really been done before. So we're 5 days away from the end of this campaign. You've already hit the goal for publication. Yes. So really looking for hitting the stretch goals now.
Yeah, we want to give people more, basically. I want to work my team even harder and give you lovely things. And then we can all get to the end of 2024 knowing that it's all in there. And, you know, we will, I think we're looking to go to press in November so people can enjoy this at Christmas. Mm-hmm. So we will have a kind of effective cutoff point of sort of October for figures and things we can get our hands on. But so there will be a stop, but we're very hopeful that the story we will tell will be 2005 to 2024, and it's all in there.
Excellent.
And then we'll come back in 10 years' time and do volume two.
Ooh. So it's not easy to give a link for Indiegogo stuff. So I will include the link in the show notes, or you can just go to Indiegogo.com and search for Go Figure, and it should come up.
Yeah, and it's all over our socials as well.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, at Cutaway Universe on X/Twitter, or I think it's at Cutaway Comics on Instagram. Yep. Sorry, we've got different handles. That's how it went. But yeah, it's all out there. If you love the figures, if you love them and can't ever have enough space to have them all, or you know you won't get them on your shelf, or if you want to see some really cool prototypes, this is it.
They're in a book. Excellent. Thank you, Gareth. I'm just looking at the Indiegogo page. I just scrolled down to the bottom because obviously it uses your profile and the stuff you've looked at before to say, you may also be interested in, and it's telling me that I might be interested in an all-in-one automated beer maker, a Chameleon AI sports tracking phone mount, a next-gen hybrid smart helmet for cycling. I definitely wouldn't be interested in that. Well, I don't know. Or a Commodore 64 bread bin, colour your style. That I am interested in.
Yes. A lot of them all sound like failed apprentice tasks when they're read out like that, don't they? I thought it was rubbish. So, yeah, it's... Do you know, I love crowdfunding. I really do.
Yeah.
And, you know,
well, you've used it a while now.
I've used it a while. It hasn't been easy the last couple of years, mostly because... we found that the drawback of crowdfunding is with comics, there's such a long production lead-in time, and with all the chaos out there in the world of inflation and energy spikes and print costs have basically doubled.
Yeah.
So the downside has been with a long lead-in is that projects you thought you had budgeted, when you actually come to print the bloody things at the end of it, 18 months later, there's suddenly 40% more.
Yeah.
So... hopefully we're in a world that's a bit more settled now and we can just, you know, we can project with confidence. But it's still been good. It's still good. And I always think once we've created these things, they exist forever.
The convention you mentioned earlier, was that the one James and I did?
Oh, the one in Manchester?
Yeah.
yes. The Firefest of Doctor Who conventions, bless. So yeah, that was a difficult few days, there's no doubt. I don't think I've ever done so much running. I got a sense that we had three arenas and we couldn't save. One had to fend for itself, the other one kind of half collapsed, and one we kept going just. So yes, I think we had something like 4,000 people and a staff of 7.
Well, I enjoyed it.
Yes. Oh, well, it had an enjoyable chaos to it, that's for sure. But yeah, yes. There's nothing like being bollocked by Nicola Bryant because no one has brought her coffee. You know, when you're thinking, what else am I doing at the moment? Let me see. Let me count the things I'm supposed to be doing at the moment. But yes,
how about
you your coffee?
How about a talk with producers on the TARDIS interior, where we only end up with Philip Hinchcliffe, PowerPoint which doesn't work, microphones which aren't working, and a producer who quite fairly has little interest in TARDIS interiors because it's kind of way out, you know, 40 years ago and just not something he was focused on. That was fun.
It's true. I mean, I've done a lot of work with Philip. We've done the book with him, and Philip is brilliant. But if he's not interested in a subject,
and it was totally legitimate,
he will let you know that. Why am I talking about this? This
but is what he said that, didn't he?
But he did, yeah. And we knew he was going to say, because ultimately, the original idea was to have several producers who could bounce off each other a little. That would perhaps work. But when you just got one who's having to carry that whole topic, which isn't their zone, I totally understood where he was at. But, you know, show out again.
Yeah, that was a funny day. I mean, what I will say about it, because it's not all terrible, it was a noble attempt to try and do something at scale in a multi-venue location in a city centre. It was because it was in the Printworks.
Yeah.
And that was quite the thing. And you know what? If it had literally had an extra 25 volunteers as opposed to the 6 or 7 that we had, plus... my staff of 3, we'd have made it.
Yeah.
And everyone would have gone, oh yeah, that's great. So it's a resourcing issue. It was an organisation. And the organiser found it very stressful as well, to be fair, because it was new for him as well. Because I think he was from a background of Showmasters events. So I think everything was done with goodwill, but the end thing was.
I think a lot of people enjoyed it. It was beyond the grasp of.
Yeah. And you know the other thing he did? He made it cheap, so it was £10.
Yeah.
And that was really clever as well, because it was 10 quid. I think it was like 10 quid, and 10 quid got you in, and you could go to, I think, some of the talks, and you could queue up and get autographs. And again, we forget that for a lot of people, that's. You know, that's a pretty good deal, really, to go and see people chat and talk.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't go back to that. So I think he did more events and we kind of parted ways.
Sure.
And I've seen him occasionally since, you know, and I think he's learned from it as well. And, you know, good luck to him. He tried something ambitious, but God, it was horrible.
I found a bit of film the other day of the Davros that was driving around.
He was amazing.
Yeah, my Google Photos collection, I filmed it. And it reminded me that although it was a bit chaotic and we did have a few problems, I think our podcast bit went okay, but other stuff that obviously we were involved with didn't. Everyone was having a great time, just people wandering around, having a lovely time, taking photos, engaging with, like there was the police box, there was the Davros guy, there was, you know, you could easily walk past Paul McGann and not notice him. I did.
Or be in a lift with him. You know, there was
Or be in a lift with him, yes.
Yeah, well, that's true.
We did three interviews as well, didn't we, in the green room, which was kind of...
Yeah.
They worked well.
We had that time, right. Yeah, we had some lovely troopers, you know. So we had, you know, people that have gone now, you know, Philip Martin, who just wandered along and I had to kind of corral him because he didn't know where he was going. And Steve Gallagher, all these lovely people, you know, people who, you know, who just came and, you know, it was what it was and they enjoyed it. And... You know, some people were awkward. There's no doubt. Some people were awkward. Some people were lovely. Some people were understanding. Some people weren't. One person I had to, you know, and I won't say who it is. On the Friday night, I had to go and wait for them at the station because their train was late and they were late. Then I'd take them to the airport. Not the airport, I had to the hotel and I had to wait. And then, well, I finally got them to their place, and they were moaning to the sort of pre-do. You know, all the food had gone.
Oh,
I had no food. And then the next day, I got moaned at for everything. And then I was called incompetent. And it's like, well, you know, but I was told this is a badge of honour for this particular person.
That they harsh though.
it was irritating, but do you know what? It was such an exhausting day that really. I was just glad when it was over. I felt a bit like, you know, the Seventh Doctor when he walks out of the tent and it explodes behind him in great show. I kind of, you know, that was walking out of there and that was fine. But you're right. The people who mattered had a good time, the punters, and I think most of them had a good time. And even if it was badly organised and under-resourced, it was still great for a tenner. And you know what? A lot of people just went and drank in the bars and had a fab time.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good location for giving all the you know, the bars and the eateries and all that sort of stuff. I thought it was a really good idea.
It was doing something different and clever. And, it didn't pull off, but hats off for trying it.
Okay, so if you want to hear more from Gareth, he will be joining us in next week's podcast as well. Now, the interesting thing about that is that you will be able to hear it sooner than that if you join up on our Patreon site, and that will give you access to Gareth's next appearance, in which he tells us what's to come later in 2024 from Cutaway Comics. So the next podcast with Gareth is all about Cutaway Comics. I think we've got a Doctor Who review before then. But yeah, if you want to hear more from Gareth sooner than later, then sign up on the Patreon and you will get that before its general release, about a week early. That brings us to the end of this week's Casterbus. We'll be back soon. Until then, it's bye-bye.